It's time for our weekly conversation surrounding the subdivision. And of course, with it being playoff time, we've got 24 teams left in Division I FCS football. And we're joined by host of FCS Nation, Kevin Marshall. Kevin, is this better than Christmas for you? How do you analyze the days leading up to the opening round of the FCS playoff?
Well, first of all, I'm going to eat a whole lot of turkey. And I don't know why we eat turkey twice a year, but I'm sure glad that we do. And, you know, deep fried, and, you know, just don't do it in your house and you'll be good. But I am just ready for this thing to get kicked off and for us to get started. It is like Christmas, but it'll be Christmas before we know it. And then we'll be talking about, you know, who's going to be playing in the semifinals, and, you know, does anybody have anything in the gun for NDSU? You know, the same things that we seem to talk about just about every year at this particular time.
We'll get into the Dakota schools, of course, and Coach Polisek, the extension, in a few minutes. But one thing I'm really curious about, because I want to get your take on it. You had been really high on Harvard this season. You had also mentioned that Yale's going to give them a run for their money. Well, Yale kind of kicked the crap out of them last week, winning in the Ivy League, getting the auto bid, first time that the Ivy Leagues are in the FCS playoff, and Harvard gets an at-large bid. I know that you're not a part of the committee. I know that we all shake our heads and scratch our heads at times for what they do and don't do, but is this a tip of the cap to the committee? Is this a tip of the cap to the Ivy? How did they get two teams in when it seems as though it was always going to be a one-teamer, it felt like, when they finally agreed to come to the playoff?
It feels like a big conspiracy, doesn't it? Right? I mean, you're like, well, you know, we played 10 games and Harvard's out of conference schedule was, man, it was really challenging this year with, you know, non-scholarship Stetson, with a bad Holy Cross team, and with Merrimack. I'm guessing the monitor wasn't available for out of conference scheduling, so they had to settle with the Merrimack, and, you know, which is, you know, okay, I guess. But and then Yale did what they did. And you could maybe excuse losing a rivalry game, you know, by a field goal or 1 point or, you know, and you say, well, that's kind of how rivalry games are. But Yale beat the crap out of them. And they did it by just lining up and running the football. They had a running back go for 143 yards. And it wasn't tricking them. It was just lining up and knocking them off the football. And it was an impressive thing by Yale. Am I pleased that there's two Ivy League teams in the playoffs? I think people who listen to the show and who know me personally know that the answer to that is a big hell no. But, you know, I don't know what else they could have done. And, look, when we do our top 25, we have a goal in that, and that is to rank the top 25 teams in the country. When the playoff committee puts together this field, they have some rules and some guidelines that they must follow. And so it's different. And I think with the 8 seeds that they picked for the top 8 seeds, they got them in the right order. But if I'm Tennessee Tech, I'm scratching my head wondering, well, wait a minute. You put out these two rankings, this committee did, and in the last one, we were number 7. And since you put out those rankings, we have lost to SEC Kentucky, and we won our conference championship game. Even though in FCS we know we don't really have those, but it was win and you're the conference champion, lose and you're not. Kind of like that Yale-Harvard game, right? Mm-hmm. But for Tennessee Tech, it was against UT Martin. Well, we were number 7, and we lost to the SEC, and we won our league, and we dropped from 7 to 13. I'm not sure how that makes one iota of sense any way you look at it.
Trying to jump now into the valley, kind of valley, big sky-ish. I have a question for you in regards to where Montana sits now. They lost the Brawl of the Wild to Montana State, a field goal game, right, at home, 31-28, you had mentioned. A field goal loss to your rivals, excusable. They dropped from 2-3, Montana State jumps them to 2. That's not the curiosity I have. The curiosity I have is South Dakota State, after that win against North Dakota, is a 14 seed, going to host New Hampshire at Dana Dykhouse Stadium here on Saturday. Is it a little bit of a kick to the lower half to Montana, knowing that Chase Mason's probably going to be back and healthy after not playing football for a month and a half, and you very well may end up having to play him in that second round? I understand to try and get to not Frisco this year, but to Nashville, you got to beat the best of the best, but that seemed like a little bit of a slight, to, even though SDSU is not playing great football heading into the playoff.
You know, that's just kind of how it shook out, I think. And, I mean, talking about the health of the quarterbacks, I mean, if you're South Dakota State, be thankful that you play in the Missouri Valley, because, you know, Monmouth lost to UAlbany, who's terrible. They were 1-10 coming into this, coming into the last week of the season. And their quarterback's been hurt for 7 weeks, and they didn't even get in the field. After, I mean, that was, you want to talk about signals being sent and messages being sent. Also, look at what they did with Rhode Island. I think that was a message that has probably been received by the CAA, which is you have your undefeated conference champion, Rhode Island, CAA title winners, although I'm not sure how one can win a title when everyone doesn't play each other. That, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but that's a tale for another time. They said, hey, that's a nice undefeated in your league conference champion you have in Rhode Island. Best we can do with them is seed them number 9 and you're playing in the first round. Knock off the shenanigans with your scheduling. I think that was a message that was sent by the committee. But as far as the Jackrabbits having to go to Montana if they can beat New Hampshire, I think that if you're Jacks fans, you were sweating it out if you didn't beat North Dakota and probably weren't going to get in, even though North Dakota did get in at 7-5. But that would have been a 5-game losing streak, and the committee doesn't look kindly upon things like that as we end the season. Mm-hmm. They want teams to be playing good football. But I think that if Chase Mason is healthy, if he can go out there and protect himself, and Matt Zimmer from the newspaper in Sioux Falls has reported that he is going to practice this week, in his words, a ton, and we'll see if Chase goes out there. I think that if he doesn't play this week, it's difficult to put him out there for the first time in weeks on the road in the playoffs at Washington Grizzly Stadium. I look for Chase Mason to be out there this week, and that's setting up, if they can get by New Hampshire, as being a really good ball game down in Missoula.
Kevin, when it comes to the bracket, obviously it came out. I was maybe a little bit surprised seeing a North Dakota get in there. You know, there wasn't too many teams in the tournament that really made me scratch my head and go, how do they put those guys in there? But when you look at, you know, kind of comparing it to your top 25, is there anybody outside of maybe some of the HBCU schools that you were surprised didn't get in, or that maybe you feel like they got snubbed a little bit, or was it all pretty much self-explanatory just for simple fact you got to figure in strength of schedule, etc., when it comes to the selection committee?
Yeah, you kind of have to do that, and it's difficult if you're, again, to mention Monmouth. I mean, you know, they do have a win over Villanova, which is a better win than Rhode Island has, period. And they're in the same league. It'd have been something if they could have played each other, and, you know, maybe we would know something about Rhode Island and know a little bit more about Monmouth. But you just can't lose to 1-10 UAlbany in the last week of the season. But I think these guys did a pretty good job of selecting which teams got in. People scratching their head, well, why New Hampshire? Well, who else are you going to put in there, right, in their place if you take them out? And, you know, the bubble teams, it was interesting. You know, the last four in were Harvard, Illinois State, Lamar, and New Hampshire, and the first four out were Austin Peay, Monmouth, Presbyterian, and Southern Utah. That's an alphabetical order, not in the order that they were out. But Austin Peay had a very great opportunity, man, to absolutely throw the top eight into some shambles. Their quarterback had a hell of a day on the road at Tarleton State, almost 500 yards of total offense, and was spitting the ball into some really tight windows in the passing game. But on the last play of the game in overtime, they went for two at the end of the first overtime to try to win the game. And he rolls out, and the receiver was just too wide open, I guess, guys. Mm-hmm. He hadn't seen a receiver that open probably all season. And he airmailed the throw, and Austin Peay lost. So, I mean, maybe you could put Austin Peay in instead of New Hampshire, but I think that's really probably the only, you know, gripe anybody could have with, you know, who got in and who didn't.
When it comes to, I'm just looking to see who was left, because normally the teams that are up for the conference championship and potentially going to the Celebration Bowl, those HBCU schools aren't going to take an invitation to the FCS playoffs. But it looks like the team that is out is Alabama State. Are you at all disappointed maybe that either Alabama State declined an invitation or maybe that they didn't get invited?
They have a ball game, a classic game, and maybe the Turkey Day Classic, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
And that was already scheduled. Alabama State was never going to be a playoff team because of the scheduling of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's my understanding that this is the last year of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, of that event. So, you know, maybe that's something that could happen down the road for them. But there's a game already scheduled. Alabama State was never going to be an FCS playoff team.
With eight ball games this weekend, I'm just going to cut you, Lewis. We know Valley fans are going to be in on the South Dakota game against Drake, South Dakota State, New Hampshire, and then North Dakota heading to Tennessee Tech. But of those eight games, what is the one, or and Illinois State against Southeastern Louisiana? Probably shouldn't forget about those guys, Youngstown and Yale. I forget that half of the Valley's in the playoff until I start looking at the bracket again and go, oh, yeah. But what is that game that, regardless of what's going on, you got to put your eyes on it and watch this one live, because it's going to be an absolute haymaker, you think?
I think you have to look at North Dakota at Tennessee Tech. And look, North Dakota comes in, and, you know, people can roll their eyes in Fargo all they want about this, but it don't make it not true. You know, 10 plays go differently for North Dakota this season, and they're the number one ranked team in FCS. Easily. Put a little bit more air under that ball against the Bison, what happens? That's a walk-off win, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the FBS game that went sideways in the last minute and a half of it. North Dakota had some chances this year to have a really great season. They had a good season. But Tennessee Tech is a team, transfer quarterback from Eastern Washington, vice versa, who is very good, can do a lot of things. In the second half of the year, their offense kind of went into the a tailspin if you look at the numbers, but they also committed more heavily to running the football. I think Bobby Wilder may have done that sort of a thing with trying to make his team a little tougher, knowing they could score 35, 40 points. But being okay with winning 28-14 because he needed them to be able to line up and run the football, because he knew in the playoffs that's something you're going to have to be able to have the ability to do. So that North Dakota at Tennessee Tech game will be a good one. Harvard at Villanova will be very interesting as well. You know, it wasn't just the Yale game that was a head-scratcher for Harvard. If they were as good as I and other people thought they were, it was the week before against Pennsylvania when they needed an over 50-yard field goal with the final gun to beat Pennsylvania. So, you know, it was 2 weeks in a row of, you know, not-so-great stuff put on tape by Harvard, especially their defense, giving up points in the 40s 2 weeks in a row. So, you know, I'm looking at those, and you know, the rest of the ball games will be pretty good too. I mean, we have some matchups in this first round where there might be one blowout, and that might be Drake at South Dakota, which is a rematch of a game which took place September 20th that the Yotes won. What was it, Jay?
42-21, I believe.
42-21, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I think even the Central Connecticut State at Rhode Island game will be closer than people think. That's a rematch of a first-round game last year that Rhode Island struggled to win 21-17. So we have some games this year. We have a couple of pick-ems, and then we've got some ball games where, you know, nobody is going to be plus 500 this week on the money line in games involving teams that do give 63 scholarships in FCS.
Kevin, when it comes to the bracket then, a couple questions about it. First off, the question I want to start with is when you look at the bracket, And we always do this when we look at the bracket, especially like when you look at March Madness, etc. When you look at this bracket, is there anybody you feel in this bracket that has a better path to Nashville than somebody else? I mean, do you think, say, North Dakota State's path to Nashville's is an easier road than, say, a Montana State, who would have to face off against each other again in the semifinals? Or is it all pretty even and balanced the way you see it?
I mean, North Dakota State doesn't have to leave the Fargo Dome, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that makes it a pretty easy path to Nashville, doesn't it? I mean, it's a hell of a place for somebody to have to come in there and try to win. I think, that Montana State game would be absolutely the biggest thing to ever happen in Montana if both squads can get there. But I just kind of look at this and go, if you're the sixth seed Mercer, and, you know, one of the things that the Southern Conference teams have complained about for a decade is, you know, we always get funneled to Fargo. We always get funneled to Fargo, whether we're talking about Georgia Southern way back in the day, whether we're talking about Wofford a couple of times, right? Mercer, Samford, their seasons always seem to end in the Fargo Dome. Well, this year, Mercer wouldn't have to play North Dakota State until Nashville. And so, but you would have to come out here and probably, you know, play Montana or Montana State. So I mean, that's in theory, that's a much easier road to Nashville than a SoCon team has had in a long time. And people say, well, you know, that Mercer team came to Fargo Dome last year and, you know, it wasn't a great game. It wasn't a great game, but they had their opportunities to make it a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And they just couldn't seem to get over the hump. What happened to them is what happens to most people when they come and play in that building. If you want to think about what happens to teams in that building, just think back to the Southern Illinois game this season when they're driving to take the lead right before the half, have a turnover, next play is a touchdown, and then the next thing you know, they're down 25 points. That's what happens there. And if you're Mercer, and, you know, even if you're Stephen F. Austin or Abilene Christian, who I think could make some noise, they don't have to see the Bison until the national championship game. And that's a much easier road than having to go up there and play the Bison in that building in the quarters. So, you know, that's hope springs eternal for teams not named North Dakota State this year. I think that there are teams in this bracket that have bullets in the gun that can give the Bison some problems, regardless of when they play, whether it's, in the Fargo Dome during the playoffs or whether they get to the national championship game and it's for all the marbles. And I think there are more of those teams that can give the Bison trouble this year than there have been recently.
Well, my last question then is there was something I saw online, and it's about the betting line when it comes to the overwhelming favorite to win the national championship this year. I believe North Dakota State was like a minus 250 or something, and that's the largest spread or number since like SDSU a few years ago when they were a huge favorite to get to Frisco and win the whole thing. So I guess my question to you would be, are you taking NDSU on that bet, or are you taking the field in the hopes that obviously you can make a little money with an upset being pulled?
You know, another person asked me that question, and I asked them a simple question in return. Are you giving me the money, or is it my money, Jake? Which situation are we talking about here?
It is fictitious money. This is for nothing more than pride and fictitious money.
Well, that don't matter. I mean, is it my money, though, that I earned, or are you saying, hey, here's the grand. Who are you going to bet on?
Well, if
that makes a difference.
Yeah, well, if it's your money, I'm sure then you get a more honest opinion. So if it's your money, who are you taking, the NDSU or the field?
North Dakota State, bro. But if you're giving me the money and saying, hey, play with this, well, I'm going to put it on the field, man.
There you go.
Couple of questions left as we're wrapping up. Coach Polasek, a seven-year extension with North Dakota State. It looks as though per what we're seeing locally, Pete Thamel of ESPN, he broke it initially, but more resources, there's going to be more money for the coaching staff, the assistants, things of those sorts underneath Coach P. What are your initial thoughts just on a ground layer of that, unless you guys are breaking it down in depth on FCS Nation? Then just give us a tease.
No, man, we don't. That's a local thing. It's a national story, but it's more of a local thing for NDSU, the school, and their fans. It's a good thing. And if you're an FCS team, that's really all you can do is try to lock your guy up and, you know, make the buyout as high as you can. But, you know, for people who were, well, we're going to have him till 2030. You know, we got programs out here paying coaches tens of millions of dollars just to no longer coach them on Saturdays or during the week, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if it may keep Polisek from going to Wyoming, okay? But if somebody big time, power four, wants him to be their football coach, it don't matter what the buyout is because they got the money, right? So, but the Bison are doing everything they can to hold on to their guy, which is a smart move. But when you have people that pretty much have unlimited money in the FBS, whatever the buyout is for a coach they want is not something that they're going to be worried about. It'll be less than a drop in the bucket to them if they really want Tim Polisek to be their football coach.
Also, as we wrap up conversation today, we were talking before we went live on this recording about Alex's lemonade stand, right, with Northwestern Mutual, what you, Stone, and the crew are doing with that, the Foundation for Childhood Cancer, trying to find a cure. You guys have raised close to $250,000 over the 3 years of it. You just broke $100,000 on it as of the 26th of November as we're approaching Thanksgiving. That foundation, just give us just an overview of it and let us know kind of where you guys are at with that, because that is a tremendous dollar amount. You guys just keep growing it every year.
Well, as we're talking, it sits at $102,100. And the first year of it, we raised $50,000. Last year, it was $70,000. Well, we're just entering the fourth quarter of this thing for this season, and we're already over $100,000. And this is a Fargo station. So I don't do this with a whole bunch of happiness, but, I mean, we got Chase Mason from South Dakota State, who's raised over $30,000. Aiden Bauman from the University of South Dakota, he's raised over $30,000. Taco Dowler from Montana State has raised over $15,000. And the Bison's representative in this, Donovan Woolen, has raised $1,369. I would really like to see North Dakota State and its fans get into this thing. Now, you know, you're way behind, but we're just entering the fourth quarter. And we all know the Bison are a hell of a comeback team when they have to be. So if you'll go to our website, FCSNationRadio.com, click on Alex's Lemonade Stand. You'll find out instructions on how to donate. And if you're, you know, it's getting to the holidays, if things are kind of tight, you can take a picture with a lemon on your head. Post it to social media, tag it correctly, which the instructions will all be there. And you can, that'll be counted as a $10 donation without you having to go into your pocket one bit. We would love to see North Dakota State and its fans really join us in this fight to end pediatric cancer in our time. You know, we've already funded over 2,000 hours of research into pediatric cancer with the money that we've raised just this year. Mm-hmm. And that's tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you can help us, we'd really appreciate it. Those that have donated, what an awesome thing to do. I'm just in awe of the response that we've gotten from the players, the Northwestern Mutual offices that are involved, and from the fans of these teams. I don't have the words for it, and I'm glad this is just an audio only, because, you know, every time I talk about this, I can feel myself getting choked up, and nobody likes to see a fat man cry, you know? So, you know, it's the best thing I've ever done in my media career, and it's not close. And these young men are dedicating their season to something greater than their own self-interest. It'd mean a lot to us and a lot to these kids who are suffering with pediatric cancer. if you could join us in the fight, we'd really appreciate it.
That's awesome, Kevin. I mean, there's nothing better than being able to do something and give back to charity. And what you guys are doing already at about $250,000 here in this short time you've been doing Alex's Lemonade Stand and the Player of the Week, I just think it's fantastic. So obviously, Kevin, thank you to you. I know a lot of pediatric cancer patients, thank you for your support on this, because this is something that, yes, I would love to see us end in our lifetime.
Appreciate it, guys. It's always really nice to be on with y'all. And just a reminder, FCS fans, we've got the greatest playoff system in all the college sports. And the last team to win a football game is going to be crowned the national champion. And that's the way it ought to be done.